Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This program contains dramatizations of real events. Some names and timelines have been changed. Listener discretion is advised.
"911, where's your emergency?"
"Can please, as soon as possible, please."
"Where at?"
6156 Windflower Drive.
"Okay, and what's wrong?"
"I've got my agent on the floor naked with blood every place. She's cold."
"She's cold?"
"Yes. And she will not respond." "Oh, Lord."
I remember it like it was yesterday. It was a nice day, sunny. I was off that day and stopped by the office because I had a training later on that evening. And I was getting ready to leave when this came out on the radio. I can specifically remember arriving out there and thinking, my gosh, this is really bizarre. Back then, prior to this happening, you wouldn't think that this kind of thing would happen there. Violent crime was unusual out there at that time. That's why when this happened, just kind of blew up, got everybody's attention. Everybody got upset.
Back in 2003, Powder Springs was more rural than it is today. A lot of trees, a lot of open space, but it was in a transitional from being a lot of farmland to being more residential. There was a great deal of construction going on for new homes.
It's probably about 45 miles to Atlanta. It was a slower pace. We thought that it would be easier place to live and raise family, that it would be much safer. Lori was the middle child. She's a rule follower. If you told her to do something, even if she didn't want to, she would do it. As she grew, she developed this really kind heart, and she had a great sense of humor. She was beautiful. And that beauty was inside and out.
When I first met Lori, I was a sophomore, and she was a freshman. I had a friend that wrestled with me who was in the same grade as her and told me that she thought I was cute. We started talking, I think, that day after one of the wrestling practices, and I asked her for her phone number. She gave me her phone number, and you know, a day or two later, I called, and we went on a date. She was very caring and warm. That's definitely what kind of really drew me into her. And it pretty much progressed through high school. After high school, I got hired with the Cobb County Police Department, and Lori had already started working for a real estate agent. And I asked Lori to marry me. Then we got engaged and picked a date. It was September of 2004. We were going to get married. And her parents sold us the house that Lori grew up in. So she was pretty excited about it.
Look at us. We're so domestic.
Yep. All we need is the white picket fence, huh?
Does that mean we can get a dog?
A dog? As long as it's not a chihuahua, yeah, we can get a dog.
Chihuahuas are cute.
What? Have you seen those things? The crazy bug eyes looking all over the place? Not a chance.
What kind of dog do you want?
Definitely a lab.
I could do a lab.
Yeah? We could train it to terrorize the neighborhood kids like Cujo.
Oh. Our neighbors are gonna love us. Down, boy. Dear Lord, Heavenly Father, please.
She had a wedding notebook. We were starting to plan the wedding.
In your name we pray. Amen.
Life was good. Everything was headed in the right direction. I started new home sales at the company called Morrison Homes. A year later, Lori came to work there also. And then they moved her to a junior agent in a new home community called Oakwind.
Oakwind, it was still kind of rural. I don't think you could see this subdivision from the road. You couldn't just, you know, happen and find it. Their sales office, it was just a model house.
Well, Glenn, hey.
Hey, sorry, Lori, didn't mean to sneak up on you like that. I just didn't expect anyone to be here so early.
I could say the same.
Glenn was the builder in Lori and Cindy's community. He had an office set up in the basement on the other side of the house.
Hey, how's your mom and dad doing?
They're great. I'll tell them you said hello.
Please do. If you need me, I'll be in my dungeon.
I also had him as a builder in the neighborhood I worked in. When we finished that neighborhood, he went over to Oakwind to where Lori worked. I thought he was a good guy.
Lori never mentioned any issues or any kind of scares that she'd ever had with people that would show up at the house or made her nervous. So nothing of any fear ever popped in my head.
Good morning.
Good morning, early bird. So how was your weekend? Oh, well, that was your weekend.
Don't get me wrong. It's a lot of fun, but it's a lot of hard work.
Yeah, well, let me know if you need help with anything. I remember all too well how crazy those things can get.
Lori was working with a lady named Cindy Williams. They became very, very good friends.
Speaking of work, how many showings do you have lined up this week?
So far, we have 9, and the Eckerd's called, and they are ready to go to contract.
Fantastic. I will shoot Deborah an email. Let her know.
Hi, this is Lori. Oh, hi, Mr. Lincoln. How are you? Yes, I can get that scheduled for you. What day works best? Great, we'll see you then. Bye.
It seemed like every week she'd sold houses, not just one or two, but she'd had a contract on this one, had people looking for this one. So it seemed that she was, you know, pretty busy and doing very well.
Every Monday we had sales meetings. On that particular day, we had a sales contest, and Lori's group won the contest. As a reward, the company was taking them to New York for a few days. And she was so excited. She'd never been to New York.
I know. Well, we have to take her and Johnny out to dinner this weekend to celebrate. Well, I have to find out what's happening with wedding plans, right? Okay, bye.
She came out after a little while and told me that they were going to promote her to a senior sales agent. So she was over the moon with that. I was really, really proud of her. We got in our cars and she was headed to her community and I was headed to mine.
Cindy? Lori?
I'm on one. What's your emergency?
Complete as soon as possible, please.
Okay. And what's wrong?
I've got my agent on the floor naked with blood every place.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It was 1:50 p.m. I heard the dispatch on the radio of uniform officers responding out to the scene. We had a real estate agent in a sales office in the Oakwind subdivision. She had appeared to be the victim of a violent crime. I headed out there. This particular subdivision is kind of tucked in the middle of nowhere. You'd have to know where you're going to get back there. It was kind of odd to me because this is a sales office in broad daylight on a Monday afternoon. This is something, you know, we haven't dealt with out here.
Gentlemen.
Here you go.
Okay. It's upstairs. Through here.
Lori Brown was face down, nude, with the exception of some black knee-high stockings. She had been shot in the head. Cindy Williams was on the backside of the desk. She had a ligature around her neck, and she had what appeared to be a gunshot wound to the back and also to the back of the head. We had a lot of blood at the scene, and there was a bag of balloons on the floor, and it looked like it had a gunshot defect. I can remember thinking at the time that whoever did this used them as a sort of a makeshift silencer.
Let's send it over to ballistics. Get all the clothing tested, see if we can pull any DNA.
You got it.
Two women virtually executed. We were, we're dealing with a double homicide. And we had a killer on the run out there. In investigating murders, you try not to get tunnel vision right away. Cindy and Lori, they were both nude. Was it a sexual assault? Normally, if it was a rape, you're not going to have two victims at the same location. Or we're dealing with a robbery. The pocketbooks were there. Their vehicles were there. It was sort of wide open. But there was a sense of urgency that we needed to get to the families as soon as we could, because it was beginning to appear that there was going to be a lot of media coverage, and we didn't want them hearing it from somebody else.
I was at my office, and my sales manager shows up with another man.
Yes.
He introduced himself as a Cobb County detective. And so I could tell something was wrong. And he asked me if I had a daughter named Lori Brown. And I said yes. And he told me, I'll never forget. He said, "Your daughter is dead." And I'm like, you've lost your mind. I just left her and a couple hours ago. She's fine. And he kept telling me, "Miss Brown, she's not." And he said, and also Cindy Williams was dead. We believe they were shot. I was so in shock, they had to call paramedics to come check me because I was so distraught.
I was about a week from graduating the police academy. Our academy director said that he needed to speak to me. I thought that I'd gotten in trouble for something. He said it was bad news. And then he told me that Lori and Cindy, about 20 minutes prior, had both been found murdered at their sales office. She was all that I had.
We were going through the process of getting the rosters of the employees for the construction site. Could it have been maybe a laborer, somebody that had been hired, you know, that maybe had some history? We'd have gone through their day planners, seen what appointments they had, anybody that may have had access to those ladies or to that office, including Glenn.
I was in my office down in the basement, and I lost track of time. I realized when I saw the clock that I was late for my 1:30.
So I was trying to finish up what I needed to so I could go meet with him. I used the restroom, went up the stairs, and when I went in, I seen Lori laying face down with blood on the floor and her naked. She looked very pale, and I was like, this is something wrong. So I went over to check her, and she was cold.
Once he realized that she was cold and most likely dead, he immediately got out.
911, what's your emergency?
Complete as soon as possible, please.
Where at?
6156 Windflower Drive.
Okay. And what's wrong?
I've got my agent on the floor naked with blood every place.
Oh, Lord. What's the name to the subdivision?
It's Oakwind.
He did not see Cindy Williams. And when EMS got there, they found Cindy behind the desk.
Prior to the meeting, where were you?
I was with some friends at lunch. I can give you their names. When I got back from lunch, I saw that Cindy and Lori's cars were both here. I thought they were meeting a customer, so I just went through.
Wait. Why did you think that?
Well, there was another car parked here, too.
You got a description on that car?
Yeah, it was a black SUV.
Yes, it was a black, very nice, clean, good-looking vehicle.
So all three cars were there at the same time?
They were all three there.
This black SUV was a promising lead. But that didn't mean that we were totally focused on that. We were open for anything. We branched out to canvass the neighborhood and to interview as many people as we could at that particular time. There was another sales office in the Oakwind subdivision. Interview with real estate agent in there earlier that morning. She was in her office by herself, and a potential buyer came in.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, there was something off about this guy.
What did he say to you exactly, ma'am?
Well, he said he was interested in a particular lot. I can't remember which one, but it wasn't one of ours. I told him that lot belongs to Morrison Homes. You need to go talk to them. And then he left, and God, 20 or so minutes later, I noticed he was still sitting outside in this big old black SUV.
What did this guy look like?
He was white, balding. And he was a big guy, too, like a bouncer, over 6 foot.
Description of a big white male, bald-headed, and this black SUV, that was huge. We had two witnesses that had seen the vehicle earlier, and it's pretty comfortable that the killer or killers was going to be connected to that black vehicle. Homicide investigation is an elimination process. If you've got a good lead, you got to work on it until that person's eliminated. In this case, you got more than one witness that's describing a black SUV. And now we had a description of the driver. And so we did a sketch. I remember several hours into it, we were trying to decide, what are we going to release? What do we want the public to know? Sometimes in these cases, you don't want them to know a lot. But then again, I thought it was important that get out there. And we released a description of the black SUV and the suspect.
It was all over the news. The news media, they were calling. They wanted a story. And I asked them if they could hold off until we buried Lori. We just can't right now. Just please respect our privacy.
Feedback coming from the medical examiner was that there did not appear to be sexual assault.
Police located the purses of both women, but inventorying those, they discovered that the bank cards and driver's licenses were missing. It obviously is a robbery, but whether or not the crime was committed for a robbery, there still wasn't enough evidence at that time to make that conclusion. That doesn't necessarily mean that was the motive for the crime.
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead.
Cindy's husband made a call to the office. Cindy's ATM card had been used at a bank in Cartersville, which was north of Cobb Parkway. And then we were able to determine a short time later that Lori Brown's card had been used there also.
A lot of money was taken out. I think $1,200 or $1,600 was taken out of mine and Lori's account, and $2,000 or $2,500 was taken out of Ted and Cindy's account.
So we started the process with bank security about getting any surveillance and trying to determine if we had anything at the scene that would help us. We kept the accounts open, but there was no more activity.
After the debit cards were used, they'd been tossed out of the window. Some high school students found Lori and Cindy's driver's license and credit cards and keys over near high school.
The detective recovered the video that was there for the ATM machines. And while they couldn't see the driver, they could see that it was a black Dodge Durango that was at the ATM machines. And my recollection is that that was put on the news the following morning.
You, as a parent, think that your child will be burying you, not you burying your child, and certainly not 21 years old to a homicide. Trying to pick out a dress for your child to wear in a funeral is hard, really hard. And to be right. And I couldn't let anybody else have that job. It had to be me. I was the mom.
And now, you know, instead of preparing for a wedding, we're all now preparing for a funeral.
With all the media attention, people started calling in with leads, and 911 operator asked me to call her. She said, I just took a phone call from an employee of an electric company, thinks he may have some good information. Ben Lindsay worked for Cleveland Electric. They were on a job site down in Atlanta. He had an employee. They identified as Stacy Humphreys, white male, fit the description, black Dodge Durango.
Stacy Humphreys, you're sure about that? Sec.
Stacy Humphreys did not show for work on Monday, November 3rd. He called in and said he had to take his grandmother to a doctor's appointment. Ben Lindsay said, I think he's on parole. He's worked with us a few months, kind of an odd character, and that several months earlier had a Ruger 9mm stolen on the job site, and that they had suspected Humphreys was involved in the theft of the Ruger.
Elevator, hang on.
The police knew at that point that a 9mm had been used in the commission of the crime.
Listen, I need you to do me a favor.
I asked Lindsay if he could snap some pictures at the job site of his vehicle, of the Durango, just so I could get a visual of it. And I punched him in. And he was on parole. And he was arrested in 97 for impersonating a police officer carrying a concealed weapon. If you took the bookend photograph from his 97 arrest and put it by the sketch, it was pretty close. And when you get a good lead on a murder case, it's just like a domino effect. Stacy Humphreys was as good a suspect as we had. He fit the description. He had the vehicle. He's got a connection to the area. He didn't work that day. Parolee, he's got a history with guns. It was beginning to take shape. But everything was circumstantial. I wasn't at a point where there was enough to take an arrest warrant.
This came to you from Ben Lindsay.
All right, thanks.
Ben Lindsay worked with Humphreys and was actually trying to help us. He took a couple of photographs at the job site of his vehicle, and I was able to confirm that Humphreys had a black Dodge Durango. So we just started tracking his whereabouts. And that's essentially what we did over the next 48 hours. We did a brief surveillance at the job site. And then we did a couple of drive-bys at his grandmother's house, where he had been living. His Durango was parked in the driveway. Humphreys is on parole. And folks that have been in the system, dealt with the police, know the game. He ain't getting in our car and going anywhere if we don't have an arrest warrant. And I wasn't real comfortable right then with an arrest warrant on probable cause. Because it was a double murder, I wasn't really willing to roll the dice with a bad warrant, you know, just to get him in custody and then hope he talks to us. So I made the decision to deal with this parole officer and have the parole officer reach out to him and have him come in on that Friday morning. It was risky, but it had worked for me in other cases. The 24 hours after that was very interesting. The next morning, two detectives set up down the road watching his grandmother's house. My partner and I were with Humphrey's parole officer at the time. He was supposed to be there at 8 o'clock. He didn't show. The detectives were communicating with me on the phone. A little bit after 8 o'clock, he came out of the house. He was putting clothing, bags, into the car. I was convinced that he was getting ready to go on a run. And I told one of the investigators, I said, don't let him leave the house. DeKalb County Police set up a perimeter. They got a helicopter up. But we didn't find it. He just so happened to get out, get through a couple of yards, and was able to get out of the area. In the interim, I had his phone number, and I was able to get him on the phone.
You're with Cobb County PD, aren't you?
Yeah. Now listen, Humphreys. You need to stop what you're doing. We need to get this straightened out.
Look, I know how this goes. You guys are going to pin this on me, and I got to run. And that is exactly what I'm doing.
No. It's in your best interest to come in, talk to us, and we'll figure it out.
It is not happening.
He was on a run. He rented a gray Jeep Cherokee. We were putting a bolo out. A warrant was issued, and we enlisted the aid of the U.S. Marshals to begin tracking him.
Bringing in the U.S. Marshal Service allows them to issue a fugitive warrant so that they can get the assistance of not just the U.S. Marshal, but also other law enforcement agencies in other states, because at that time they had no idea where he was going.
The United States Marshal Service started tracking his phone. And at 4 or 5 o'clock that afternoon, his phone hit a tower up in Nashville, Tennessee. He was heading north.
But he turned his phone on to make a phone call, and then he'd turn it back off. And so they weren't able to stay with him, but they were able to track him every time he turned it on.
When we found out that he was in southern Illinois later on that night, I was pretty confident he was going to try to get to the border.
Both Canada and Mexico, we can extradite from, but both of those, we have to waive the death penalty. If Mr. Humphreys reached Canada, we would not be able to seek the death penalty.
At that point, we started mapping the routes he might take. And we started calling agencies, trying to give them a heads up so they could be on the lookout. It was going to be a manhunt.
Stacy Humphreys was a wanted fugitive. And the feeling was that he was going to try to move as quickly as he could to get across the border in Canada.
All Sheridan County units, attempt to locate a Stacy Ian Humphreys, armed and dangerous subject through U.S. Marshals. Subject is 63295, involved. Should be driving a silver Jeep Grand Cherokee. He's been tracked by his cell phone signal, last known in the Pleasant Prairie area, northbound on I-94, possibly trying to flee the country.
About 5:30 Central Time, a police officer in Waukesha County, Wisconsin, had gotten a lookout. And within a few minutes, the Jeep passed with the drive-out tag on it. And then the chase was on.
A silver Jeep Grand Cherokee, 494 westbound.
10-4, we notified State Patrol and Pewaukee.
The chase actually lasted 30 or 40 miles. And at times, the speed were in excess of 110 miles an hour.
It was about a 45-minute chase. And then they stop-sticked him, blew out his tires. He ended up coming to a stop in a hospital parking lot.
At that point, Mr. Humphreys gave up, put his hands up, and said, "You've got me." When he was arrested, there is a gun in the car, and it was a 9mm, and it was later determined to be the murder weapon.
Got into town, went over to the jail, and we sat down and interviewed him. He was hunched over, kind of very somber, kept his head down, and before I could even, you know, read him Miranda, he said, "I'll go back, I'll plead guilty to the death penalty," and he said, "I'll talk to you."
You remember you had them together at the same time, made them take their clothes off?
I don't remember any of it. I don't want to remember any of it, but...
Do you remember picking up the shell casings that you shot them?
No.
You shot him, killed him. They were dehumanized, but you don't remember any of that. Is that what you're saying?
It means.
It turned out to be about a two-hour interview, and for the most part, he claimed that he had blacked out and that he couldn't remember certain things. We were kind of we were talking in circles.
Considering what you did to those girls and some of the thought processes that went into it, just having a hard time rationalizing that you can't remember anything about it. Because there was some thinking that went into it. You're going to have to offer up some type of explanation.
What the hell am I going to say? I can't myself. I'm supposed to explain to somebody else.
Do you remember holding a gun on either one of them?
If I went in there for... If I did that for nothing but money...
Well, I don't think it was for nothing but money.
I don't care about money. I don't have any. I don't care.
The night before the murders, he had gone to dinner with his girlfriend and a friend. He tried to use his bank card to pay for the meal. It got rejected. He had a vehicle payment coming up on the Durango. So he was looking for somebody to rob.
The next day, he went into that subdivision with the intent of robbing one of the agents. There was nobody around at the time, and he took advantage of the situation, found Cindy alone in the office, and then Lori Brown came in and took their cards, murdered both of them.
It's our job to try to find out why. But But that's your call, because you're the one that was there when it happened, none of us.
Regardless, the reason I don't know why the hell I would do it, and it for what it sounds, it just, I don't think disgust is the right word, but I can't think of a reason.
I hate to use that word closure, but for a lot of people, they want to know the why. And in this case, we can't give a why other than that he was trying to get money, and so it was a robbery that he just turned into a very deadly situation.
Those two girls had the right to live their life and to go through their lives. But all that was taken away by one person's decision to commit a crime, a heinous crime. I feel like justice was served as far as him being incarcerated. I feel like justice will finally be finished when his execution happens.
He still gets to wake up every day. He still gets to breathe. If he wants to, he can still talk to any of his family. He can watch TV, he can do whatever he wants every single day. Lori was murdered on November 3rd, and I graduated the police academy on November 13th. And I think that did help me a lot in my police career. It gave me a completely different point of view for the victims side of things, or being able to relate to people that are, you know, a victim of violent crimes, because I had been through it. I lost somebody.
Lori was a good daughter. She always tried to do the right thing. When you lose a child, you have to find things that help you remember that child and honor that child. My husband, we established a $1,000 a year scholarship for a Cobb County student. We felt like this was a very good way to honor Lori's memory, because she would have made a contribution to this society, and all that was taken away much too soon.